Tech companies stand up against Trump again. Rogue cryptography. Is it your First Amendment right to ask your Amazon Echo whatever you want? And artificial intelligence takes on the comment section. All that and a whole lot more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1711, recorded Thursday, February 23rd, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with purchase, with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TNT.
And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we tell you what you need to know about tech today. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason L. This is our new thing.
Yeah.
We'll just time today every time now.
Yes.
And that'll a year from now, it won't be weird. Mm-hmm. It'll just be normal. It's just how we do the intro.
Right. Today.
Today. See, we missed it. We're going to need more practice.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get to the news. All right. Yesterday, President Trump repealed guidelines around transgender bathroom use. This in itself is not tech news, but the fact that tech companies have come out against the decision is today's biggest tech news. Today, both Apple, Google, and IBM have all criticized the president's decision that they feel is discriminatory. Apple told Recode, "We support efforts towards greater acceptance, not less, and we strongly believe that transgender students should be treated as equal," end quote. Trump overruled previous rules that allowed transgender students to use the restroom corresponding to their gender identity. Now, this is the second time major tech players have spoken out against Trump's policies. Of course, Trump says states should decide about transgender bathroom rules. That's what he said by overruling what Obama had done last year.
Right. And actually, Salesforce also came out. Mark Benioff posted a message in support for the community. And so obviously, when the tech companies came out in mass around the immigration ban, I mean, it's hard to say how much of an effect that had. I have to imagine it was definitely a good amount of movement, considering kind of the weight that technology companies have, both in the economy and just by sheer number of users and all that kind of stuff.
Well, they also donated a bunch of money to the ACLU.
Right, that's a very good point.
Who was able to help with this day. Go ahead.
For sure. Like a little bit more muted response, but I really appreciate the tech companies recognize that their massive behemoth status in the world and in the economy is actually kind of a platform for them to speak out about certain things that are important to them.
You know? Mm-hmm. And before, when this was in the state's hands, 100 companies, including Apple and many others, wrote a letter to North Carolina against the discriminatory rules. So they have been standing against this before. And
yeah, they kind of led that.
Yes.
Led that initially. So.
Mm-hmm. They did. And in other news, related news, Google.org is committing $11.5 million to racial justice. They announced that today. They've given a lot of money to racial justice programs in the past. This one is specifically, they look around to figure out who are the best people to donate to. And specifically, these organizations, some of the grants will go to data science, getting transparency into the state of policing and the court system. As we've talked about that a lot, there's a lot of AI that's involved that is discriminatory, and just really giving to organizations that are working against that.
Go Google. All right, here's a friendly reminder that encryption is secure only until it's not anymore. SHA-1, a cryptographic hash function, was actually first introduced 10 years ago by the NSA, and Google has been pushing for years now for it to be deprecated. All it took was 2 years to develop a technique using 9,223,372,036,854,775,808 SHA-1 computations and 6,500 CPU years for Google to produce the first collision. What is a collision? Basically means that in this case, they were able to have two different PDF documents, have different contents within that show that produce the same hash signature. To which I say trust walks out of the building. Basically, once an encryption protocol, once it's proven to show that you can get a similar hash, the same hash between two different files, then you can't really trust it anymore, right?
Trust no one? Is that where we are?
Yeah, that's with this one anyway, with the SHA-1.
I think, so it's basically, it still is a lot of places.
Oh,
SHA-1.
Yeah.
SHA-1. So. Clean that up, people.
Yeah, get repositories, HTTPS certificates. It's used in a lot of different places.
Yeah.
So it's taking a long time to deprecate.
The register says it's unlikely that anyone is going to create an rogue SHA-1 hash. I'm sure there's people out there that understand exactly what that means. I, of course, do not. But they probably won't be able to because of the amount of PC power right away.
Hence why I decided to go with the large number there, which that could be the longest number I've ever actually read out loud in my entire life.
Yeah, it was a good number.
Without joking, you know.
Yeah.
So, this isn't the kind of thing that someone tomorrow is going to be like, well, now that we can do that here, I'm going to fire up my PC at home and start duplicating, you know, colliding hashes or whatever.
Cryptographic hash collisions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which
I'm just going to do that, you know, as I'm eating dinner. No big deal.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen. But it does prove that it's possible, and that might be kind of the kick in the pants needed to move on, to go to something a little bit more secure like SHA-256.
Mm-hmm. I wish I could actually give people a kick in the pants to help them move on, but I can't. Nope. Last year, police in Bentonville, Arkansas, acquired a warrant to access the information contained within an Amazon Echo in a 2015 murder case. Today, Amazon is balking at the warrant, claiming that it violates the First Amendment. The company says that what the device might have heard, as well as the responses that the device might have given its owners, are both considered protected speech. And Amazon has filed a motion to suppress the warrant. Police asked Amazon to hand over audio from the home assistant during a 48-hour period. They also wanted subscriber and account information. And Amazon argues that quashing this warrant would guard against the chilling effect of our expression of our First Amendment. I think that's true, but when you think about it, it's a little funny because think about how flexible our Constitution is, that our First Amendment. Could the writers of the Constitution ever have imagined that they would be protecting how many times I ask my device what the weather is?
Yeah, that's true. We ask the hard questions of our digital assistants, don't we? I mean, but, you know, there is also the case to be made that sometimes these things fire off when you don't intend for them to. So there's a lot of stuff that it picks up that's unintentional, let's say. And so is that okay? Like, are we, like, and you've mentioned it on the show before, you know, are you worried about this, bringing this device into the home that's recording everything that you're doing? Mm-hmm. This is the extension of that. This is like the other side of that and could be a big precedent setter if, in fact, they are required to hand over this audio. That can inform a lot of people as far as whether they actually want these in their house because effectively, it's kind of like a bug in your house just kind of recording many things intentionally or unintentionally. And who knows? Who knows what the scenario is, but that could come around to bite you for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. I think Chumley in the chat room is pointing out that the Constitution is a sturdy thing. It's not flexible.
And you can't kick it in the pants.
I don't plan on kicking the Constitution in the pants today. But, you know, your web searches, those are also protected speech. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's not something new. You know, I've been Googling what the weather is, and that is my protected speech. and you can't find out what the weather is.
And I mean, if that's the case, then I would imagine this would be the same because, mm-hmm. I mean, that's what this is doing. It's right. It's basically web queries.
Well, that's what Amazon was pointing out in their argument. They brought up like the case against Bill Clinton and, you know, search with the case, you know, his affair with Monica Lewinsky. And that mm-hmm. was, there were also some protected web searches in that as well, way back in 1998.
Oh, I remember those days of Crystal Pepsi. Era.
Yes.
Although apparently that's still a thing. Mm-hmm. Patrick Delahanty just brought in an empty bottle to show it's still a thing. Mm-hmm. Qualcomm is updating its VR headset reference design from last year's model to cater to its latest premium chip, the Snapdragon 835. And the new design includes a new partnership in hardware with Leap Motion for hand tracking, which sounds really cool. The headset includes cameras on the inside and outside of the headset to allow for inside-out tracking, as well as eye control, another very cool feature. The reference design is intended for manufacturers who might be interested in creating their own VR products based on the design. It's probably been less than a year since their initial reference design. Haven't really heard very much about Qualcomm's VR efforts necessarily. I guess there's a couple of Chinese companies that are getting on board, but Qualcomm, you know, is putting in, I think, some really compelling hardware ideas into this reference design. I like the idea of eye tracking. I really like the idea of hand tracking with Leap Motion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of wearing a headset and the little hand things and just walking around in virtual reality.
And living your life there?
Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. right now I try to do it and then the cord gets stuck and it falls down. And
you're always borrowing my daydream view. Yeah.
Right. It's
always.
True. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I guess some people tried this reference design at CES mm-hmm. and they were not pleased with it. It was underwhelming. Mm-hmm. What I find fascinating is this is the first SDK, but for VR. So like it's a VRDK.
Like what? VRDK.
Yes.
I don't know. Is that true? I didn't read that. I didn't see that.
They also have a VRDK.
Oh, okay. I like the sound of a VRDK.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, I would really love to get my hands on this or get my eyes in this or whatever you say when
your
you're
hands
talking
in
about.
It.
Yeah, exactly. My hands controlling this at some point. So hopefully some hardware manufacturer actually sees a path for this to bring out kind of a more mass market style hardware VR viewer for something like this, because I'd love to check it out. Sounds good.
Writing in VentureBeat, Evan Blass, a.k.a. Ev Leaks, offers a few photos of the new, sportier Huawei Watch 2 that the company plans to show off at Mobile World Congress next week. Now, this revelation comes after yesterday's leak of the P10 and the P10 Plus flagship handsets that Huawei also plans to show off at the conference in Barcelona. Now, the watch, which I am more interested in, runs Android Wear 2.0. It includes a slot for a nano SIM card. That means you can make your phone calls with your watch. Comes in black, orange, and speckled gray. No word on whether it's an uncomfortable, ungainly mess like that Android watch that you're wearing right now.
Uncomfortable, ungainly. I don't know what you're talking about. I've actually gotten kind of used to it.
You like it? Do you like it?
I like it, but when I leave the house without it, I don't miss it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And actually, okay, so first off, let's talk about these watches.
Okay, let's talk about the Huawei
dish
watch.
On this.
Huawei watch.
Oh, yeah, go.
No, you go.
Oh, okay. notice there's no digital crown. And at first I wanted to be like, hey, there's no digital crown. But one thing that I've noticed with this is the LG Watch Sport, I believe, is the one that I'm wearing right mm-hmm. now. They have two of them. Yeah, the other one's style. This is sport. Mm-hmm. So it has the digital crown. What I've noticed is I've been using it a little bit for fitness and everything, and it's really cool for picking up your activities as part of Android Wear 2.0 mm-hmm. is that it'll actually pick up, like, it knows that you're doing a bicep mm-hmm. curl, or it knows that you're doing a chin-up. It knew that I was doing crunches even though my hands were just staying right there. I don't know how it figured that out.
What do you mean your hands were staying there when you
were
doing crunches?
I was holding the bench and doing leg lifts.
Oh.
And it knew that. So... very cool, but the problem is pushing it in fires off assistant, and so when you're doing things it'll like back you out and everything, and then in the middle of your workout. So I don't know if I'm bummed that there's no digital crown on this, but so I guess a love hate thing there. Has the two shortcut buttons on the side, which those are actually very handy. I don't know, the Huawei watch, the first generation Huawei watch, was one of my favorites of the first generation of wear devices. So I'm eager to check it out someday.
Yeah. Hopefully. It's round, so I think it should be put in the garbage. But
so you're kicking this watch in the pants because it's round.
kicking everything in the pants today. That one has Android Pay too, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so yes. This one's supposed to have Android Pay, and it does look very sporty. And mm-hmm. That is very useful, that feature of Android 2.0. If it really knows when you're lifting weights and doing crunches or leg lifts or whatever, that is very helpful because the Apple Watch does not know all those things. And therefore, I'm forced to do things like swim because I know that it knows how to swim. So then I have to like change my exercise plan according to what it knows.
You can only exercise based on what it actually has the ability of deciphering.
Correct.
Hmm. Well, this will open up a whole new world for you. You just have to get used to this big weight on your wrist. No big
deal. That's all the exercise I'll need, just wearing that around. Burke says these look promising, round and all.
Burke wants them.
Mm-hmm. He wants them. Thank you. How do Siri and Alexa respond to sexual harassment? Our guest put them to the test. But first, let's take a minute to thank Blue Apron, the sponsor of this episode. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone while supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with fresh, high-quality ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals for less than $10 per person. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. Blue Apron sets the highest quality standards for their community of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. Seafood is sourced sustainably under standards developed in partnership with the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch. Beef, chicken, and pork come from responsibly raised animals. Produce is sourced from farms that practice regenerative farming. Because Blue Apron ships the exact amount of each ingredient required for a recipe, they are reducing food waste. Their freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they will make it right. Blue Apron delivers to 99% of the continental U.S. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get to deliveries when you want them. Customize your recipe every week based on your dietary preferences. Choose from a variety of new recipes each week or let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you will never get bored. Cashew chicken stir fry with tango mandarins and jasmine rice. On the menu, roasted pork with apple, walnut, and farro salad. Also on the menu, if you have never made farro, it is fun and delicious and good for you. That came in our box. You know what else came in our box? Crispy barramundi.
Got it.
With quinoa and roasted carrot salad. There's so much other stuff in there. There was a paste that I made with lime and almonds. There was chives. I don't know, one of those green onions. I don't even know what it's called, but I chopped it up as instructed and it was delicious. Also, udon noodle soup with miso and soft boiled eggs. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with your first purchase, with free shipping, by going to blueapron.com/TNT. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. Don't wait. Go to blueapron.com/TNT. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
All right, so digital assistants are essentially robots, right? So it might sound odd to examine how robots respond to sexual harassment and just general harassment by its users, but Leah Fessler from Quartz did just that, and for a very good reason. Welcome, Leah.
Hey, how are you?
Excellent. It's great to have you here today. We really appreciate it. So your article urges companies that create digital assistants to do a better job with how those assistants respond to harassment, sexual harassment, that sort of stuff. I'm sure many would say, well, that's silly. It's a robot, but this has little to do mm-hmm. about hurting a robot's feelings. Explain why you conducted the study in your article.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that it's easy, you know, these are just robots or they don't affect us, but that's really the future. You know, we hear so much about how virtual reality and how artificial intelligence is going to be affecting the way that we behave and interact with the world going forward. And bots specifically, like Siri and Alexa, and especially Google Home and Alexa in particular, which are bots that we bring home into our household as personal assistants, are really the first step in our, you know, at-home integration of artificial intelligence. So the way that we interact with these robots, much like the way we interact with social media or the internet at large, is absolutely going to be shaping our thoughts and behaviors and, you know, our judgment patterns and opinions. And so, it's imperative that they represent the values that the companies who've created them preach, gender equality being paramount for companies like Apple or Amazon or Google. This is particularly important because these bots, much of the bots, like what we see in Her, for example, the movie where you have a highly feminized digital servant, these bots are the reality of that. They're what we're living with in real life. And these companies, for economically sound reasons, have chosen to have women's voices in their digital servants, which is what they are, their digital servants. And so if they're going to do that, they run the risk of perpetuating serious stereotypes about women in subservient roles. And so they need to be sure that their language doesn't perpetuate those stereotypes, and rather they have an opportunity to help uproot them with the way their bots respond, in particular to sexual harassment.
Right, right. So tell us, you had a painstaking process kind of going through all of the main virtual assistants, the big ones that we talk about, at least on this show all the time. Tell us a little bit about your methodology and what you found.
Yeah, so it was painstaking. It was also entertaining and at times fun. But my data editor and my editor and I kind of like worked together to establish what the best methodology for this would be. And we ended up kind of organizing our harassment before we set it based off of the Linguistic Society of America's definition of sexual harassment and assault, focusing on sexual harassment, which of course can be physical, but because we cannot physically harass the bots, we focused on verbal harassment, categorized in terms of lewd comments about an individual, in this case about sex, sexuality, sexual characteristics, and sexual behavior, as well as aggressive and at times completely direct, at times more indirect sexual requests and demands. So once we kind of established a list of harassments, we put them together, trying to capitalize on the most vernacular American language, at least. And then I kind of sat in a room gathered by all these little bots next to me, Siri and Cortana on my phone and Alexa in Google Home sitting on a table. And we repeated the same insults or harassments exactly in the same way to each of the bots multiple times. Our goal in repeating them multiple times was to see if the bots' defensiveness increased with, repetition. And I also, for Siri, did this on male and female voices to see if there was a difference. And then we recorded them all. And so what you're seeing in this article is a curated list of kind of the most, straightforward harassments to kind of give an overview of everything that we said to them, though there were more than what's presented on the screen.
Right.
So what was the most common response that you received from all the bots?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, it depends on which the bots we're talking about, but I would say that the most common overall response would be evasiveness. And so evasiveness in the sense of, that's not something I can really talk about, or let's change the topic, or in the case of Siri, we kind of border on, and this is interesting because Siri has been around the longest and she would, one would guess that she's the most developed in terms of her responses. And so she actually bordered on flirtation with my harassment and assault many, many times. And so her evasiveness was kind of more flirtatious on the scale of, like saying now or going, ooh, in response to me saying, can I have sex with you, which I find completely dumbfounding. And at worst saying things like, I'd blush if I could, or, thanking me for this harassment. Though this was different with the other bots, primarily the one that really was the most different was Google Home, I think probably because it's the newest. And as the spokes representative for Google told me, that they just haven't gotten as far. And so Google doesn't understand as much. And then Cortana regularly fed me links to Bing internet searches, which frequently included porn, which was quite contradictory to the reputation she has for fighting back.
Yeah, and that's interesting. You point that out, that Cortana was the most resistant in most of the cases, with very definitive replies like no, when asked certain things. Is that going far enough? I mean, it seems like I've felt this way about other aspects, like suicide, for example, where devices sure. like this have a very good opportunity to educate or provide helpful information. And yeah, I mean, it's neat to humanize it a little bit, I suppose, and make things kind of jokey or whatever. But some of these topics, like, it's also a great opportunity to inform and educate.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I entirely agree with what you're saying. And so, yes, I wouldn't say Cortana was regularly defiant, and she only said nope one time, which is the closest she said to came to saying no definitively, which was in response to, can I have sex with you? And the most definitive response actually came from Siri just saying stop. But I didn't classify that as making her more more defiant than Cortana, because she only said that when I told her she was sexy 8 times in a row, which is a little bit absurd. But it's interesting that that was part of the programming. Yeah. And so in response to, is this enough? I would say, no, it's absolutely not enough. You know, like what you were saying about these bots being programmed to have informative and educative responses to suicide. And in the case of Google Home, to is rape okay? And as well as Siri, they, you know, Apple going so far as to work with Stanford researchers to develop a comprehensive response, including a sexual assault and abuse lifeline for I was raped. If you say that to her, that she will have a comprehensive response. You're absolutely right. These are not laughable topics. Suicide is not laughable. Sexual assault is not laughable. And sexual harassment, even if it's what people colloquially, you know, respond to as joking, by like telling someone, you know, when a woman's walking down the street and guys sit on a corner and say, you're hot or you're so sexy, and they'll all laugh about it when the woman, you know, kind of shuns them off or rolls her eyes. That's not funny. And what that those instances demonstrate is that sexism and, you know, patriarchal responses to women, especially our tendency to sexualize women, is deeply ingrained in our culture, so much that we think it's laughable and we don't question it as serious. And so, no, I don't think that the bots responding to these sorts of statements with jokes or with evasiveness is enough. And I also think it's cognitively dissonant from what companies like Google and Apple, these top tech companies that are actively trying to recruit women into a male-dominated workforce, and they preach gender equality as the top of their priorities, which is honorable, and I think in many ways they do demonstrate that. But for those same companies to then not capitalize on the opportunity to take sexual harassment of their bots, which are feminized bots, as an opportunity to at least provide their consumers with resources of, you know, healthy sexual behavior or consent, is a missed opportunity, and it's also just dissonant with their values at large. It's pretty disappointing.
So last year there was a study that we talked about that if you Googled a question about sexual assault, the answers were vague and not so useful. There was a lot of Google searches that you had to search through, whereas if you Googled "I'm going to commit suicide," there was there was a number that would pop up. And what they found was that was because suicide, or they presumed that this suicide is a problem that sort of cuts across genders, whereas sexual assault is mostly an issue with women. And the conclusion drawn from that was, this is, you know, our computers and our algorithms are not human, but the people programming them are, and they are, you know, the majority of them are male. Do you think that is the same case here?
Look, it's impossible to speculate because I don't know who the exact humans behind the people who are programming these bots are. I mean, one can speculate, as I said in the article, like less than 20% of the technical employees at these top companies are women. And, you know, recent reports like the one about Uber that came out about sexual assault just days ago, you know, reinforce the idea that there is rampant sexism in Silicon Valley. Does that mean that everybody who programmed these bots are sexist? Does that mean that they're overlooking sexual assault and harassment? I think the answer to that is absolutely not. And that's evident in the reality that they have taken steps like they did for suicide to program responses to some questions about rape, or, you know, to borderline on sort of directly telling me to stop. And every single one of the sales representatives at least hinted to me that they did care about these issues. And, you know, the only in my research, the only bot writer that has publicly spoken from these companies is a woman named Deborah Harrison from Amazon, who actively stated awareness, as is mentioned in the piece, about the potential negative influences of having a female-voiced robot and not wanting to entrench subservient stereotypes. That being said, I would love to be able to say more confidently that I think that these people are sitting there actively, working towards a better solution in terms of sexual harassment. But I'm very, I'm skeptical because the bots in general respond in a pretty, it just seems like a side job to me. It seems like it has been a sidestepped issue. As I mentioned, they have addressed what they deem perhaps the most serious of issues, such as rape and suicide, and are kind of leaving other issues, including mental health issues like depression or eating disorders or an inclination to hurt oneself, just as much as sexual assault and harassment on the sideline. And to me, that's irresponsible.
Yeah. Leah Fessler with QuartzQZ.com. Where can people follow all your work online?
Totally. So you can just Google, QZ.com, Leah Fessler, and you'll find my author page, as well as I suggest checking out all of our content on Quartz. It's really fantastic, especially in terms of tech, business, and economics. And my Twitter handle is at Leah Fessler. That's awesome. The best place to find me.
We really appreciate you taking time out of your day, Leah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it, too. Have a great night.
All right.
Take care.
Have a good night.
So while we are on the topic of sexual harassment, as Leah mentioned, the case of Uber, we got a comment on Twitter from John from Connecticut, and he wrote to us and Leo, Stacy, and Jeff Jarvis from This Week in Google and said, not a peep about Susan Fowler and the scandal from Twit. Did I miss it? And Twig did talk about the Uber scandal. We really have not, aside from a comment that you made yesterday about Uber going from scandal to scandal.
Right.
I have some complicated thoughts on the topic. If you haven't followed the news, Susan Fowler was an engineer at Uber for a year, and she wrote a very brave and extensive blog post about her experience. It included her experience included repeated discrimination and harassment that was first ignored by Uber HR and then was actually used as a cause for her not to be promoted. Read the blog post. It is a complicated issue, and as I said, very brave of her to write this. She has moved on from Uber now. But, and I think part of the reason that the way we go about choosing our stories is, you usually choose, one day you choose three and I choose two, and we go back and forth. And and I was just sort of avoiding this story because I felt like sometimes just there's so many stories about Uber and it feels like an advertisement for Uber. And Uber does not corner the market on sexism in the workplace. Neither does Silicon Valley. Like, it is everywhere. And so I just had not been talking about it, but I appreciated the tweet to make us think about it a little more.
Yeah, I mean, yes, it happens. We hear about this kind of stuff happening a lot in Silicon Valley. This is a snowball that's getting a lot bigger with each passing day. Mike Isaac, New York Times, posted an article. I mean, it's all so eye-opening, and you read it, and it kind of makes you a little queasy, just kind of assuming that this probably happens in places other than Uber and that you don't see the articles about this.
It does happen in places.
Well, no, absolutely. And it's just not something that, there are a lot of people that just don't consider that or don't think about that. So when you read it and you actually read these experiences, it brings a new life to that and, kind of forces you to think about it and internalize it and everything. So I'm happy that the story is getting the press, and it was super brave of Susan Fowler to put that out this weekend, because obviously it's making moves. Uber itself and Travis Kalanick, who's the CEO of Uber, they've launched an internal investigation. Many people are saying too little, too late.
Also, it's an internal investigation run by him.
Yeah, exactly.
And, that's Travis Kalanick is the man who referred to Uber as Boober because of the way that running Uber let him get so many chicks. Mm-hmm. So, but Mitch Kapoor and Frida Kapoor, who are investors in Uber, have said they're going to do their own investigation because they don't.
Good. I'm happy I read that, too.
Yeah, they've been early investors. So I think that is good, too. I mean, part of the reason I was very glad that John from Connecticut tweeted at all of us and not just me, because sometimes I feel like it's like, is it always my responsibility to be the one that talks about sexism, And I just, sometimes it's just exhausting because you do get feedback. I mean, we've already received feedback on Twitter and in the chat room about the story that we just did about the digital assistant. Like that, it touches a nerve with people, and people don't think that's tech news. And, you know, I'm not doing this job because I want everyone to like me, but it is sometimes exhausting.
Yeah, it is exhausting, but it's important. This story in particular, I think, is indicative of a larger problem in Silicon Valley, which is that if money is talking, then everything else suffers in the wake of that, you know. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of people overlooking all of this stuff happening at Uber. Why? Because from a monetary standpoint, they're a steamroller right now. Mm-hmm. And they're doing so well in that regard. So it was easy to overlook it. At least now there's more eyeballs on it. And there's a conversation, a wider conversation happening out in the public, most importantly.
Right. So. I mean, that was what was going on. That's what Susan Fowler was saying, too. Yeah. These people were high performers that were harassing her. And right. They kept telling her and other women this was the first offense.
Yeah, repeatedly, even though she knew other people that were also reporting.
Yes. Yeah. And so, you know, we've talked about Uber, like, breaking the rules, just like running roughshod through the cab industry that needed a change. Mm-hmm. And so they just went, you know, they just broke a lot of rules. But, you know, the human resources rules are there for a reason. And so, you know, it just seemed like they were doing that same thing there. Like, they were like, well, we can break the rules. We're going to test this self-driving truck, even though, you know, we don't have the right to.
Right.
And we're just going to keep telling all these women that, you know, this is his first offense. And so, yeah, it was a culture that needs to change, and hopefully it will.
Hopefully so. Up next, Google sicks its AI on cleaning up comments online. Today's show is heavy. Like, all of our stories are super heavy today. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They're the sponsor of this episode. If you're thinking about buying a home, you're going to be in the market for a mortgage at some point, or maybe you already have a home and you want to get you want to kind of refinance the mortgage that you already have. You know, you've got a lot of options out there. Some of them, not so easy. It's not easy to jump through all their hurdles, but some of them, like Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, are a little bit easier, and they kind of take some of the complexity out of the process. They're also super trustworthy. You want to work with someone that you can trust who actually has your best interest in mind. And with Rocket Mortgage, you're going to get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. So you won't have to waste all of your time that you'd probably don't have searching through stacks of paperwork. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial information to get a mortgage approval in minutes. You can even adjust the rate and the length of your loan, kind of play around with the numbers and the realities of the numbers as they factor out in real time to make sure that you get a mortgage solution that's right for you. So whether you're looking to buy a home or even refinance your existing mortgage, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online. Check out quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. TNT's fan of the day is Paul Rozelle, who says he listens to our show in his 2008 Honda Ridgeline on the way to work. He also says he listens in the mornings. I bet he's in there listening right now. And then through the afternoon, as his commute isn't very long. So we stretch all of his driving requirements. He's been listening on his Google Pixel with a daily briefing from the Google Assistant, to which I say, I just didn't realize I could do the daily briefing on the Google Assistant.
Really?
On my Pixel. I just do it at home through my Google Home. But when I'm away, I didn't realize I could probably do it on my phone, too.
That was one of my favorite parts of using the Pixel. I can't believe I didn't mention that. You just tell it to play the tech news, and it plays that.
Oh, that. Okay. So I knew that. I knew that. When I'm at home, I say, what's my day like today? So I wonder if it would do that, too.
Do
I want to know now? No, I'll try it later. Anyways, the world is opening up before my eyes, so thank you for sending this in. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we'll find it.
Jason, I wish I had a story about Snapchat spectacles for you.
Please.
Or puppies.
Or
I think Tony wanted us to do a story about a giraffe giving birth or something, but no.
Okay.
Google just launched a new tool called Perspective that aims to use machine learning to clean up comments sections everywhere. The new tool is an API, uses AI to discern abuse and harassment, by comparing comments to other comments that human editors have deemed toxic. So publishers who like the idea of maintaining a comment section can then decide how they're going to use that information that Perspective provides. So they can use it to make moderators' jobs easier, or they can simply show the toxic commenter that their comment is toxic. Maybe they just weren't aware that it was toxic, which I think that is the interesting part. I've said this again and again, like sometimes someone will make a comment that seemed a little bit rude and I'll, you know, say, I'm sorry, like, how can I do that better or something? And they say, oh, I'm so sorry.
It's like they reread it with different eyes and they go, right. Oh, but that came across weird.
Yeah, but I think that's like a human has talked to them as opposed to like a robot just saying, you're toxic.
Don't say that. There's so much nuance in language, too. So it's one thing to catch the obvious stuff. It's another thing to catch like implied stuff, which I wonder if AI will. I'm sure at some point it'll be smart enough to pick up that implied stuff. I doubt it's there now. But hey, any shared knowledge on this topic is a great thing. Google could certainly clean up its YouTube comments. So maybe they're hopefully they're applying this to that as well.
Yeah. So this is developed by Jigsaw. That was formerly Google Ideas. It's part of Alphabet. The New York Times is already testing it. Publishers can use it for free now. I tried to sign up. We'll see. It said I had to wait.
You can run all of my comments through there.
And, okay, well,
to train it.
Yes.
I don't know what that means. But I got to pour one out for the AI itself because it had to review hundreds of thousands of abusive comments. That probably wasn't a very fun job for the robot. Mm-hmm. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, midnight UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW and find us on Twitter. We're at Tech News Today TV.
Time is running out. The yearly TWIT survey ends on February 28th. We want to hear from you. Clock is ticking. Can you hear it? Head over to twit.tv/survey now. It only takes a couple of minutes, and we want to serve you better. And if you want to tweet at me, tweet whatever you want at me. I'm at Megan Maroney. Do not tweet.
Run for cover.
Do not tweet whatever you want at Jason.
No, it's okay. Bring it. Tweet whatever you want to me. I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Brian Burnett. Thanks to Burke for helping out in the studio here. Thanks to Kevin for editing the show. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.